As you start to reach more people, things start to feel more complex. There's more to do and more to keep track of, and it starts to actually take time away from creating content. I felt this struggle personally. The more creator science grew, the more it felt like I was dropping the ball. So I did something about it. I built a set of rock-solid systems, all in Notion, to support the business as we grew, and it worked like a charm. I've now taken my personal Notion setup and productized it. It's called Creator HQ, and it's the complete operating system that you need for your creator business. I built Creator HQ to be an all-in-one workspace designed to save you more time, create more content, and drive more revenue. By leveraging Creator HQ, we are publishing more than we ever have, and we're nearing $1 million in annual revenue because of it. It brings all of your data and processes into one place with custom-built dashboards to reduce friction in managing tasks, creating content, and collaborating with your team. I've seriously spent more than 3 years building this, and now you can have the same systems that I use right out of the box. In the lab, one of our members just posted, "I have spent the last few weeks diving into Creator HQ, learning how it works, and making it my own. This is the first time in a while that I've felt this organized and filled with hope that I can find a workflow that will work for me with my whole business. This is gold. I will definitely be giving a testimonial for this badass product." If you're new to Notion, don't worry. I've included a ton of specific tutorials to help you learn how to use Notion generally and Creator HQ specifically. I've never seen another Notion product integrate tutorials like we have here. More than 300 other creators are already using Creator HQ, and I am not exaggerating when I say I would be lost without this system. Creator HQ is what keeps the trains running over here. As a podcast listener, I'm giving you my best price. You can get 10% off using the promo code PODCAST at checkout. Just head to creatorhq.co to watch the video and learn more. That's creatorhq.co and use promo code PODCAST to save 10%.
You only need two huge hits a year that go outside your bubble to completely change the trajectory of your channel.
That's Danny McMahon, but you might know him from his channel Dodford. Danny is one of the hottest rising YouTubers right now. His documentaries have done about 20 million views since January of 2023, but Danny doesn't make videos just to get views.
I started to realize that the reason I create is not really got anything to do with the number that comes after it.
This interview is a rare glimpse into the mind of a creator on the rise while they're in the thick of it. How did he get here?
After 3 years of studying film and falling in love with that, it took 2 weeks of doing content creation where I realized, oh, this is way more fun. This is way more rewarding immediately.
How is he feeling?
I still don't see myself as relevant. As soon as you do, that's a risk to me.
And what's in store for the future?
This time next year, there's a type of reputation about the videos we're making that are a league above and could be looked at as almost a pinnacle of what to seek out when trying to create.
Danny gives so many good pieces of advice for creators of all sizes throughout this interview, even some things that might contradict what you should do.
I don't know if this is the best thing for all YouTubers to listen to what I do here, but for me, I went to film school because the plan was always traditional movie industry and make my own films, become a director or a writer. That was always the number one plan, at least since about age 16, 17 onwards. I was just obsessed with people like Tarantino and like real cinema. And that was my way forward that I only saw myself pursuing. With that in mind, at the very end of my graduation year, there was an extra task to try and build a bit of a social media presence. You know, not saying that they were telling us to become influencers or anything, but it was in preparation for leaving our course. You need to, if you're going to join the film industry, you need to have some sort of existence online, whether it was just a LinkedIn or an Instagram or whatever. So I made an Instagram account and just started making little tiny crappy videos for my 40 followers, which is the origin of Dodford. That's where it became its first thing. I made a TikTok to match it too. Those started growing. After 3 years of studying film and falling in love with that, it took 2 weeks of doing content creation where I realized, oh, this is way more fun. This is way more rewarding immediately. And I just completely abandoned that idea of doing traditional that early on. And now it just went all focused, eggs in one basket. But I do know that traditional route will always be there waiting for me one day.
there are probably a lot of peers that you had that are going and writing scripts and doing, you know, full length features. And you're saying, I'm going to do these short form vertical videos. Talk to me about that. Why did you get started on TikTok and what did you like about it?
Well, I'll start by saying, I think something that holds a lot of people back in the traditional way out of film school is, yes, you think I'm going to take everything I've learned in these last 3-4 years and put it into this script and it's going to be me. It's going to be an essence of everything I've learned and it's going to be the best script ever. People are going to buy it. And people pour months and months and months into making one film or script they're going to dish out. And as a result, they burn all this time. It goes out into the world. They inevitably stumble and it doesn't hit the way they dreamed it would. And that holds people back. Whereas I'm not saying this was something that was premeditated, but something that afforded to me straight away by doing short form content was you make something, you try it out, you put it out, you reap the benefits or you learn the lessons and then do it again the next day. And that was rinse and repeat of just trying something new, getting better at something random every single day. You've got to iterate. That's always the key early on, finding out what your mark is, your style, what your identity is as a creator and as a person. And when that's going to slowly form and evolve. And that's what TikTok let me do. It was a way of just really testing an audience, testing my abilities and improving them. Looking back now in retrospect, that's where so many of my skills and benefits were birthed and were improved. So I do give it as like, that's my piece of advice that I give to most young creators and filmmakers who are trying to find their feet or learn something about the industry is just keep posting content. It doesn't even have to go out really to an audience or people. If as long as you make it and you're giving yourself a challenge and doing something different every single day, that's like the easiest way forward, in my opinion.
How long until you started to feel like, I think I'm getting more attention on this platform than the average person?
Never.
Never?
Well, it depends. The average person is. Average person, I guess, is someone who doesn't really have an account or post. But no, I always felt like an underdog on TikTok, actually, because I had a few early hits and, you know, some that did really well. But overall, if you look at my TikTok, you'll see that through most of it, I was below average views for my follow account. And I always felt like I was looking up to these huge creators who were raking in millions of views. And it was actually during that period where I started to realize that the reason I create is not really got anything to do with the number that comes after it. And so, no, I mean, I'd still had a few hits. Like in the first, maybe my third video was an editing tutorial and that got a couple hundred thousand views. And I went from like 80 followers to 20,000 followers in like 2 days. And so that was my first influx with people. And my true introduction into what this serotonin is like being as a content creator, you know. I've only had a few of them really in my whole TikTok career. So I always felt like I was never really a big star on the platform.
When you were focused on making videos specifically for TikTok, how long do you think it took you on average to make one video that you published?
It changes. I did some, like I said, where it's, I've got to do this idea today and put it out just because it was part of my routine. Others I would spend maybe a week on. And I think you'll be able to tell, if you went through and watched old videos, you'd be able to tell those ones that had a little bit more thought and production value put in. I've always felt like the video takes as long as it takes to make, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It feels, when I've put more time into something than typical, like if you're saying sometimes I make one video in a day and sometimes I make one video and it takes a week. For those videos that take a week, if it was me, I would feel so much pressure on that video when I finally hit publish. Like I really believed in this thing. It's going to take 7x as much time. Do you feel that type of pressure when you put huge amounts of time into making one of these?
Definitely at first, and I can't say that I've completely detached from that. Like I said, I think it was during this era when I felt like my views didn't reflect the effort I was putting into videos. And I think it's a stage that happens with everyone who makes videos online, is that you have to detach effort with quality and the amount of people it's going to engage. Those are completely different things that you can't quantify together. So I definitely feel the pressure still today, but that's not the reason I create. It's got really nothing to do with that second half, influence it has. It's more so the process it was for me as a filmmaker, as a creative. How did it affect me and change me? And then the things that you can't really quantify, the sort of impact and influence it has, the types of comments that you'd get, the people who bring it up to you months later and say that, oh, I shared this with my family, we had a laugh about it. Those types of things, which are, they don't come up as a digit or a stat. It's something that's like more invisible. And those are the reasons that you actually create. And I never try to forget that. There is always a happy middle ground where you try and eliminate that risk by not pouring so much time into something that in the back of your head feel like isn't worth it to you. So it is always finding a peaceful place in the middle, but obviously the pressure still exists.
What has your relationship to YouTube been as a platform? Do you feel like you are an underdog there as well? Did things pick up faster than you expected, slower than you expected?
It definitely was slow at first for a long time. The way it works on YouTube, it felt kind of exponential. As soon as there was a little bit of growth, it all rises rapidly and your whole library's there just ready to be seen. Everything else grows with it. That felt very rapid. And so there have been a few months in my journey, which I can look back on as, real pivotal defining moments that completely change the trajectory of the channel. And I truly feel like you only need two huge hits a year that go outside your bubble to completely change the trajectory of your channel. And it's happened to me maybe 1.5 times this year. And I can credit most of my growth to just a couple videos, which there's many ways of seeing that. I'm grateful for it, but also, again, it's pressure in finding that special video that can do that. And in the meantime, just trusting your content regardless and enjoying it anyway.
Talk to me about those 1.5 times. Which 1.5 videos are we talking about here?
The main one is Adam Sandler. That one goes without saying. It's by far my most viewed video, about 5 million. Yeah, that single-handedly took me from 100K to 200K, essentially. It almost doubled my follower count.
Wow.
And I think Jim Carrey recently has been another one that's similar. And also Donald Glover, right at the beginning of the year, that kind of, in January, that was one of my first documentaries, maybe the first one really, that truly skyrocketed and people like ended up, KSI ended up watching that one and tweeting me about it, which is pretty surreal because, that was when I woke up to the fact that anyone could be seeing it and all it takes is one shout out or one share from the right person and then everything blows up exponentially. That happened with Mr. Beast for my Adam Sandler video. He just tweeted that he saw it and said it was a good video. And that just makes it grow further. I like that YouTube seems to be being seen by everyone. And you never know who that lucky person could be, which could change your life. And that's happened to me many, many times.
After a quick break, Danny and I talk about when his channel really changed and his plan for the future of Dodford. So stick around. We'll be right back. If you know me, you know how much I believe in memberships. My membership is the core of my business, and earning an income directly from your audience is one of the most sustainable ways for you to become a professional creator too. So I want to tell you about today's sponsor, Uscreen. Uscreen is a beautiful all-in-one platform that helps content creators earn a living from their videos by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. You can host private live streams for your members, build an on-demand catalog of premium content, and Uscreen gives you a community hub to interact with your members too. They can access your community from their mobile phone, so your membership is right there in their pocket. With a Uscreen account, you get video hosting, an out-of-the-box website, full payment and subscription management, and plenty of third-party integrations too. And Uscreen makes it easy to get set up. You get access to powerful website themes that are fully brandable with no coding skills required. Uscreen will even provide a dedicated success manager for you. Just about anyone that wants to make money from their content can do it with Uscreen. It's perfect for coaches, authors, influencers, and entrepreneurs in just about any niche. Right now, Uscreen is used by creators in fitness, education, news, kids entertainment, and more. That includes Yoga with Adrian and Creator Now, just to name a couple. Uscreen is the platform for building a video membership site that is great for generating a sustainable income for professional creators. If you create video content for your audience, I highly recommend checking it out. If you're interested in learning more about Uscreen, visit uscreen.link/J. That's uscreen.link/J, and let them know that I sent you. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Last year, my wife and I started talking about her joining the business full time. This is a huge decision, not just for the business, but for our marriage. My wife, being the very smart and thoughtful woman that she is, suggested that we proactively sign up for therapy as a couple to help us communicate better before we started working together. It really helped us have better language to describe how we're feeling and listen to one another, which generally lowers the intensity of any conversation. Now, I had never been in therapy before, but here's something that I didn't expect. It didn't just help our dialogue, but it helped my inner monologue too. The way I understand my own experience has changed based on the tools that I got from therapy. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, it fits your schedule, and you can be in the comfort of your own home. Just fill out a short questionnaire and you'll get matched with a licensed therapist. They even make it easy to switch therapists if it doesn't feel like a fit. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/creator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/creator. And now back to my conversation with Danny McMahon. Speaking of KSI, talk to me about your Sidemen video, because if you look at the history of the channel, that looks from the outside like a major inflection point. Did that feel different when you released that video?
Yes. I think that one, that Sidemen one, I still see as a video essay, but there are moments of it that feel more like a documentary. It was an objective, it was a challenge of mine from the beginning to have the Sidemen see that. I chose them because, one, I've been watching them my whole life and I know a lot about them, and so I had a lot to say. But I also knew that they were accessible and this type of thing hadn't been made about them before. And there was a gap in the market where I could create a video that they could see and react to, which is what they did eventually. It was an amazing moment because it was the first time after creating for about 2 years where I'd kind of finally got access to what felt like this inner circle, in a way, of all these people that I'd looked up to. They could now like see me, which was a strange moment where all those lines kind of get blurred and that parasocial relationship can falter a little bit and things have to become real. And it's a weird feeling when your idols end up, they're still your idols. I'm not going to say they're my peers, but you know, they're people who recognize your existence, which is just weird on its own. And I made so many connections. It's where my network really opened up. Around then, after that video, lots of the UK community sort of noticed me, which was really, really fun. And then after that, it was Donald Glover, and that seemed to be when I got my US audience.
I want to hear more about this, because a lot of people listening to this probably haven't had that moment yet, but this could be incredibly motivating for them to think about how we get there. So you mentioned a few things that I want to dig into, actually. The first thing you said was the subject of this piece, the Sidemen, you said they're accessible, but something like this hadn't been done before. So you notice this hole in the market. That's a very analytical statement to make. You create one video a month long form on YouTube right now. So the shots that you take seem to be like they need to be fairly thoughtful and intentional. How many competing ideas do you have at any given time? And how do you ultimately decide which one you're going to commit to next?
Back then, in that era, there was no premeditation or planning beyond the day before I decided to make the video. So that Sidemen one, it was a good idea that hit me as a spark on a weekend. And I realized, okay, here's something I can do. I will start this immediately and have it up hopefully by 2 weekends time. And that was the way it was for a long time, where it was just an idea would come. What am I going to make this week? And it'll be something totally different. And it's not sustainable to keep living like that, because you're always relying on some idea to hit you. And it's, it's not how my brain works. And so eventually I don't know, maybe about halfway through this year, I learned the importance of just the idea alone and the time that it comes. And so the big learning experience really for me was Drew Barrymore. Up to that point, through most of 2023 and immediately following Adam Sandler, I kind of had this confidence where it didn't really matter what the subject was of these videos. It was just the way we presented them and the production quality, the type of storytelling we did, the way it was, the packaging, all of that stuff. I was just having all these hits, and it was because of us. It was the way we created them. And that definitely is true for a lot, for most of it. But when Drew Barrymore was put out, that was the first real stinker. It was the first time it didn't hit expectations, and it hurt me in my heart. And I learned then the true, like, this has to, one, really appeal to your audience, and it has to come at a time when there's a discussion, whether it's a conscious discussion that's really happening on the internet, or it's a thing that everyone's just kind of quietly thinking about. And so since then, all these videos have to be planned and thought months in advance, and we look really far into the future. So I have all the way up until December next year, December 2024, all videos for each month planned out.
Wow.
And we've taken into consideration, what is this person working on at this point in the year? Have they got a film out coming? Are they working on something? Is there a big stage of their life happening, which means they'll be part of the discussion, you know, the pop culture lexicon? And so I really feel like we could make the best video we possibly could, and it would just come out at the wrong month of the year, and it wouldn't hit the way that it should or could.
This may seem like a strange question, but let's see where it goes. You're talking now about how you're planning for these videos to be a hit. You want these to be a hit. Why? Why, to you, what does it mean to have a hit, and why is that important to you right now?
I think a hit, an immediate hit, isn't really that important to me on a cellular level. But I think all creators will attest to that you can't shake that thing off you, that when something is a 10 out of 10 straight away, you know, and it stinks straight out of the gate, that's always going to hurt. And so I think for me on our channel, it's making these productions that we really believe in and we really enjoy making and speak to us as individuals, that mean something, that come from the heart. Meanwhile, trying to mitigate that potential hurt of something not finding an audience. So it has to be, again, that balance of making something for us, but also making something for the people. And there's got to be a Venn diagram where that video sits right in the middle. Otherwise, you know, it's going to go to a large audience, but it's not going to be fulfilling to you. Or it's the opposite, where it's a real big passion project, but no one really cares about it. For me, a hit is when it hits both of those things, when I'm proud of it and other people, it really speaks to other people. And a few videos, I think, on my channel, even recently, have fit more into the passion project side of things, where it's just truly the type of video I wanted to watch and make. And it's fulfilling to me in the regard that, yes, I've made that, and the people who want to see it will see it. But I do want to grow the audience, and I want to make sure that, you know, we're proud of what we make. So I want more eyes on it, really, but never sacrificing that passion, that way that we would tell stories. That's got to always be number one.
You're using the word we a lot. How big is your team, and what's the makeup of that team?
At a core, a team of three, just me, my researcher, Adam. He assists a lot with the story as well as researching. And my producer, Jaden, who just kind of keeps me on track and makes sure that, and he helps a lot with the packaging. I also have Dan, who mixes the sound, and my manager, Gil, he helps a lot with brands. So it's, I don't know, maybe a team of five altogether who work on the videos. But for me, I'm still scripting and editing it all myself.
Well, one reason that I ask is a team of five, and I'm sure there's varying degrees of like part-time, full-time partner.
Yeah.
But there's costs involved and requirements of the business, even for you. So a hit also plays a role in more likely to help support the business and support the team. Do you feel that pressure when you make these videos?
Yeah, definitely. Ever since I hired, and there are people who are on a payroll, and you know, I have to. It's an extra layer of accountability now. Where as soon as that happened, and I realized, okay, it takes an investment now every month to get these videos out. I definitely saw the whole business and project in a different way, in a different light. In a way, I appreciate it more actually now, because just one, that financial investment, it makes it kind of feel more yours in a way. I just saw it in a new way, where it's an art, it's a slightly different art, the science of analyzing, if we're going to invest this much money into something, how can we make sure that it makes a return? How can we make sure that this is a safe bet that's going to provide the business with more money, essentially? And it was just a whole new way of seeing art for me, which I've never been a financial person. I've never been driven by that whatsoever. But you do have to, if you want to have a sustainable business, think about it a bit, right? And it's been fun for me, actually. It's been fun trying to identify how can we just make sure that this ship stays afloat, essentially. I've never done that before, but here we are.
In some ways, I almost feel like I'm feeling some pressure from you on the performance of these videos. And I mean, I exist online. I exist on Twitter, and I've been more in the YouTube community over the last year or so. Time after time, people talk about, hey, who are your favorite creators right now, or who's up and coming? And I just see Dodford come up over and over again. Dodford's going to be big. Dodford's going to have 1 million subscribers in the next 6 months. So I'm sure you're seeing that because you're literally being tagged in it. Mm-hmm. What is your reaction or relationship to comments like that?
This is a good question. It's a very good question. I had lunch with Zach Conover a few months ago, if you know him. And I was having this discussion with him because I think it was after the Drew Barrymore video, which was the first time my channel had hit a slump all year. And this was in June. And coming right off that cliff of Adam Sandler, where everything felt easy, I felt like I'd sussed out the formula. This was a trajectory that wasn't going to falter at all. And then you have your first real stumble, and I had to find my feet again. I was telling him, I was like, unconsciously, for most of the year, the first half of the year, I had seen myself like as if my purpose on the platform, my brand, was the small guy who gets big views, which, looking back, is completely false. And if I had heard someone else describe that to me, I would have kind of even been offended by it, like as if that's something that matters to me that much. But because that's what was happening, and I was putting out these videos that were getting hundreds of thousands, millions of views, just with either a small team or just me, it kind of felt easy, and I got complacent in that, I think. And as a result, that fall hurt so much, because I had to really look at myself and identify, why are we making these videos? Why are they being put out by us? What does it say? And how important is the views to us? I had to like really taste the feeling of having less views for a while, just to relearn again why I was making them in the first place. And so it was a dangerous thing of rising a bit too quickly and forgetting why you started in the first place. But that pressure still exists now. I don't see myself as someone who has to get big views anymore. But the pressure really isn't anything anymore to do with the growth or where the channel could be in the future in terms of digits. It's more so, I know people compliment the way that we make the videos and the editing, the writing, how unique they can be. And I feel a bit of pressure in making sure that we can sustain that, making sure that I know that I can keep growing as a storyteller over the years and have something new to provide. Otherwise, I don't want to get boring and I don't want to get old. So it's re-examining myself a lot, thinking of new, fresh ways to add to things, but never being buckled down by the idea of feeling like people are expecting you to do big things or whatever, because I think that's always a dangerous mentality to have.
I think a lot of people have had this experience of, relative to me, this thing was a success. Then after that, relative to me, this thing was less of a success. And we feel that thing you're feeling of that, like, ah, why? And it sucks. And but we don't go deeper than that, because I wonder where that fear actually comes from. You know, is it a fear that, like, it's over, I guess every video is just going to get progressively worse now? Because when you say that out loud, that's a ridiculous thing to assume. Like, just because you had this one video go down, that's probably not indicative yet of a trend that everything's going to zero. So what is it? What is it about a down video that sucks so much?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, it was the fact that I had to, it was immediately followed by such a good run. And just that contrast of something that came so easily, felt so easy, then suddenly felt and looked so hard. It was like as if you have to look at yourself and think and remember how you did it in the first place, even though nothing really changed. That's why it's so scary, just because it's, you're looking at your history and thinking, well, this doesn't match up with the trajectory I already had in mind. But that doesn't exist. Nothing exists besides what we're living in right now. And so it's super easy to look forward and think, oh, yep, okay, this is the path. This is where I'll be. That is irrelevant and impossible and something that you can't ever predict. It's just, it's going to go have ups and downs. That's really the only thing we can predict.
How much do you look at the analytics in YouTube Studio?
Very rarely.
Very rarely. Say more about that. Why don't you look at those things more closely?
I mean, I'll start by saying I don't know if this is the best thing for all YouTubers to listen to what I do here. But for me, I can make something that I'm really, really proud of and know that as an old man, I'll look back on one day and think, oh yes, this is one of my most projects I'm most proud of. And I'm so happy I made this. It really speaks to who I was at this point in my life. And I can feel so strongly positive about something, open up the analytics and see a lower AVD, you know, or some type of data that contradicts that and says that the general consensus was that this was an underperformer. And I will read that and shift my perception of my own video, which was completely concrete solid before, into this new arbitrary analysis of it, which I hate the feeling of that when, even if the data isn't bad, just by looking at it and seeing that the ups and downs, the real science of it, that can detract from the overall message and the impact it has on me. My producer, Jaden, he does a lot of that for me, where he will go through and find a lot of the big picture stuff. I'm very cool on big picture analytics of thinking about, okay, what is the types of audience, the type of platforms people are using, and learning about the science behind the whole brand and where we should take it, what people are enjoying the most. But on a very granular, minute level, I just don't think art should be viewed that way, where it's you're looking at every tiny little bump and trying to smoothen it out. That doesn't compute in my head. And I'm more of just okay, let's take a big Excel spreadsheet and learn about the data of everything combined and learn about psychology of people in terms of the audience and behavior. But I'm not going to go through and, like, I've never studied a retention graph and found a little dip and tried to rewrite that in my head of a way of doing it again. That's like the way I made the video is the way I wanted to make the video, and it will be the way I want to make the video in the future. And I'm trying to, people who don't want to see it that way don't belong on my channel, and I've got no fear of that, of that in general. You know, it's like, if you're here, I want you to be here, and I'm happy you're here. I'm not going to try and appease everyone.
Well, think about data. The data is objective. Like, it'll show you, here's some true statistics about the video. But then when you try to rationalize and understand, well, why is it that way? That's when things get tricky, because you can make very plausible sounding arguments for why did retention drop here that may not actually be true. That's the hard thing about looking at analytics, is actually understanding what they mean and getting it right. There's lots of plausible explanations. And if you just make an assumption and then change your entire approach to how you make videos based on that. That's a tricky, dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. What about right after you publish a video though? Are you refreshing YouTube Studio as often as I am?
I think in the past 6 months, I don't know, in the past like second half of this year, I've told myself, okay, post a video, don't look at YouTube Studio for the whole weekend. They go up on a Friday.
Wow.
I will have a look on Sunday evening, usually. That's when I'll like first open it up. And because the 1 out of 10 scale within the first 7 days to me is completely redundant. Lots of my older videos that have hundreds of thousands of views now, or some of the bigger hits, didn't get any views for 2-3 weeks. And again, you're falling into the trap if you are trying to analyze straight away if something's a hit or a miss, because those things, those two adjectives don't really exist on a YouTube video that early. Anything can completely change. And so, in the past, I've beat myself up and thinking, oh, this could have been better straight away, or gotten too excited early on and things fall flat. And so I try not to judge it too early and just let things breathe and simmer for a bit.
When we come back, we talk about the way Danny integrates sponsors into his videos, which really caught my attention. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by Podcast Movement. For the past decade, Podcast Movement has organized the world's largest gathering of podcasters, featuring thousands of attendees, hundreds of breakout sessions, panels, and workshops, plus the largest trade show in podcasting. Podcast Movement helps podcasters of all experience levels create, grow, and profit from their show. It's suitable for beginners, but you'll also have the opportunity to meet some of the biggest names in the industry. I've been to several Podcast Movement events, and not only is the programming incredible, but the culture and vibe are incredible too. It attracts thoughtful, empathetic, and collaborative people, which makes sense when you think about the medium of podcasting. Podcast Movement hosts 2 events per year. The first just wrapped up, but their flagship conference is happening August 19th through the 22nd in Washington, D.C. Attendees have the freedom to choose their own adventure across several different stages throughout the 4-day event, not to mention dozens of amazing networking events, parties, and the expo hall floor. Tracks include podcast creation, video and live streaming, industry professional, plus several stages of curated programming from some of the top companies in podcasting. It's truly a unique event, and if you are a podcaster, I cannot recommend it enough. Right now, tickets are available at super duper early bird pricing. And as a Creator Science listener, you can save $50 on top of that by visiting podcastmovement.com/science. That's podcastmovement.com/science. And now, please enjoy the rest of my conversation with Danny McMahon. You do sponsor integrations better than anyone I've ever seen. It seems as if the sponsor integrations themselves are small vignettes that would probably take most people days, maybe longer, to complete themselves, and you put them in so seamlessly as transitions between points in the story. So open-ended, I just want to hear how you approach sponsor integrations, you know, what you accept and how you think about how this will live in the video.
In terms of, okay, I'll give you a cool little a point of analysis again, which, like the Sidemen thing, I spotted that the bar is very much on the floor when it comes to brand integrations. And the average person, the average creator doesn't try. And so I still feel like mine aren't very good. Maybe they're just a little bit different to what people expect and remember. And I've tried to cash in on that. I've tried to capitalize on the fact that if you put in that extra 10% of effort, or even just a 10% of a more of an abstract, unique idea when it comes to a sponsorship, it stands out to people so much. Like, I think it also came from these videos. There's such a scale to them. There's such like a depth to them. When they started becoming more serious and the brands were getting introduced, I didn't want these sponsorships to just feel like, I don't know, I didn't want them to detract away from maybe even the emotional intensity or the production quality of the rest of the video. They weren't going to be conventional talking heads. That was important to me because, like I said, I kind of want these videos, they exist on YouTube, but in my mind, they're in a way being made for a cinema, you know, that's they're something that deserves to be seen on a large screen, or that's the way I that's what I picture in my head anyway when I'm making them. And so if it just cuts to a more conventional YouTube talking head where it's clearly a YouTuber talking about a brand, that feels like a complete step away from the direction I was taking the video in. And so it was early on, I was like, we've got to try and do something unique. And those transitions are the most important part. The actual meat of a brand integration isn't really that important. It's those transitions in and out where people are, you know, you're just seamlessly guiding someone into something different and then out of it again to tell a different point. In my latest video that's coming out end of November, early on in like a discussion, I was like, I don't really care about what we say in this brand integration. Let's just tick the boxes, what they want us to say. But how can we find the best possible way to transition in from the story we were just telling and then use the integration to convert a new idea into a transition out? And those are the only two points that I'm looking at. And then it's just finding how those two points meet in the middle for the brand integration. And so it's a part I enjoy a lot of the time. And people, people might spend a lot of time on it. I do, you know, I usually spend about a week on them.
One of my favorite questions to ask people is kind of a hot take on something they believe to be true, but don't necessarily have the data to back up. So when it comes to YouTube and what you're doing to grow your channel, is there any type of like hunch or assumption you're operating off of right now that you don't necessarily have data to prove, but it's influencing how you're creating videos?
I'm trying more and more in each video to tell my story only with music or sound. You become a stronger creator by eliminating things from your toolbox. And so starting out, even just a few months ago, I felt like I had such a big toolbox of all these skills and things that I needed to use because they were there and they existed. It means I had to utilize them to make anything I made. Over time, I've been cutting these things out. So even just face cam was the first thing to go. Those are no longer in my video. Because it felt like, yes, that was what was expected on YouTube. You know, you have your face in it, and it felt like a cop out. I was using that and in sacrifice of trying to tell better stories. Then voiceover has been started getting reduced and then completely eliminated. So there's no me in them whatsoever anymore. It's all just the editing and the writing. And as a result, because you're taking these things away, everything else has to improve. You know, it's like if you go blind, your hearing gets better. You know, it's a shift there. I think those decisions that I've made, so take away the face cam in Adam Sandler, that was the first one, huge skyrocket. Take away the voiceover in Jim Carrey, huge skyrocket. Those are two videos that have completely blown up because I made a decision in it to do it in a different way. Take something out of the equation and see how everything else is affected by it. And I don't know if this is something that I could completely replicate over and over and over again, but there is something there. There is something to really examining your process and the way that you've gotten used to it, and then just reinventing the wheel almost, just taking what seems like an integral core part out of your pipeline and taking it out completely and just letting it evolve in a new way. And those are the times that I've made videos that have really hit new heights or I feel the most proud of.
What are your expectations or even goals for the Dodford channel over the next 6 months or 12 months or whatever horizon you have?
It's kind of an invisible thing. I want to just keep growing from strength to strength as a creator. And I mean, before we hit New Year's last year, I put out a tweet saying I will hit 1 million subscribers in 2023. And that was just a very arbitrary thing. I was like, okay, that's the goal I'm going to try and seek out. I don't think it's going to happen. It would take a miracle now. But for next year, I'm not going to give myself an objective like that, where it's just a number to hit. It has to be something more with the impacts or an influence that we're creating. I think I've got quite an identity that people are trying to replicate. Things like thumbnails, those have been duplicated 1,000 times. But so I would like to exaggerate that, where this time next year, there's a type of reputation about the videos we're making that are a league above and could be looked at as almost a pinnacle of what to seek out when trying to create. I don't know. That's a, don't really know what I want. I'm just going to take it one day at a time and try and make the best videos we can make, and try and keep having fun with it. And wherever we are in 2, 3, 5 years, that's cool with me, as long as the process is fun. That's really all it is.
I think about the idea of relevance a lot. I think when you start getting the dopamine hits of success online, you suddenly, at least on a subconscious level, become aware of your own relative relevance in the spaces you care about.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to think about not having anymore. Do you have any reaction to that?
I still don't see myself as like relevant. And I think that's, as soon as you do, that's a risk to me, like for that reason alone, because that's not something that exists forever. For most of my career, I've seen myself as an underdog, and I don't think that will ever go away, really. I don't want it to ever go away, to be honest, because I think that idea of always chasing a future version of yourself, or trying to, the idea of there being competition, the idea of you having to keep one-upping yourself is the formula to becoming a better artist. And yeah, so I'm just gonna keep creating and not think about, I think really eliminating the noise is really important, and keep focusing on yourself as a person and as a creative, and just see where the road takes you.